I'm sure you've probably heard a lot of buzz recently about I-bonds, which are all the rage, but you may not know exactly what they are. I'm about to explain in full detail in this, the 19th episode of the Retirement Planning Education Podcast.
Welcome to the Retirement Planning Education Podcast, where you can learn all about IRAs and Roth IRAs, employer retirement plans, taxes, Social Security, Medicare, portfolio withdrawal strategies, annuities, estate planning, and much more. And now here's your host, Andy Panko.
Welcome back, everyone. So let's talk about I-bonds, where the I stands for inflation. I'm sure you've probably heard a lot about them, or maybe not a lot, but at least you've heard of them in the last, handful of months, let's say. About to explain everything. Well, I like to think everything, or close to everything, that there is to know about them. And as a very helpful reference, everything I'm about to say is all on treasurydirect.gov. So www.treasurydirect.gov. Pretty straightforward, but I'll have a link to that in the show notes. Long story short, I-bonds are a form of government savings bonds, so issued by the United States Treasury. And the interest that you get on them is indexed, is based off of actual inflation, hence the I and I-bonds. So that's a super quick and dirty. Let's get into it. So I got this broken down by different sections here. I'll start with kind of an executive summary. So as I mentioned, these I-bonds are government savings bonds where the interest is keyed off of inflation. Specifically, the measure of inflation it uses is what's called the CPI-U, or the Consumer Price Index, which is CPI. And the dash U denotes for all urban consumers. So the United States Bureau of Labor Statistics is responsible for tabulating and reporting monthly changes in inflation. And it does that basically by, there's lots of ways to do it, but the general premise is it comes up with a hypothetical basket of goods and takes readings of what the price of the goods are within that basket every month. And each month, based on those readings, that there's a value. And the value started at 100. The index, if you will, had a value of 100. I don't remember exactly when 100 was the base year, or the base reading. But ever since, as inflation increases, as that price, that aggregate price of the basket of goods increases, the CPI, or Consumer Price Index, figure goes higher. So anything higher than 100 means prices of that basket now are larger than they were whenever the base year was, when the reading was 100. And then every month, simply, if that aggregate basket, that index value goes up, that means there's inflation. If that aggregate price of goods in that basket goes down, the CPI reading goes down, that means there's deflation. So that's it. There's a link in the show notes that you can see the actual CPI-U monthly readings. Again, that's what I-bonds base their interest rates off of. So I-bonds started, they were first issued in 1998. The interest rate that they pay is reset every May 1st and November 1st. So every 6 months, the interest on these changes. And the interest that's paid is a combination of two different rates. There's a base fixed rate that'll stay there for the life of the bond that you own. And on top of that, added to that is the actual change in inflation as measured again by CPI-U. Now, the fixed rate has been, since May 2020, has been zero. So there's no sort of base rate, if you will, which means the interest rate ever since May 2020 has only been the inflation-based rate. There's no base fixed rate. Now, the fixed rate was as high as 3.6% in May of 2000. But it's been below 1% ever since May of 2008, since the financial crisis. So fixed rates has been relatively low. Now it's been zero. It's been zero for a couple of years, as I said. But that's the interest rate in a nutshell. And I'll get more into what it actually is and how it's calculated. The other thing to know about I-bonds is they cannot lose principal. You put money in, you will never get back less than what you put in. You'll only get back what you put in plus some amount of interest. So they're technically a savings bond, as I mentioned. They are government, issued by the United States Treasury. They're government savings bonds, but functionally more like a savings account. Again, for the reason I mentioned, you put money in, you will always get back, you can never get back less than that. You'll get back what you put in plus some amount of interest. So this is different than a normal bond, as I mentioned in you know, previous episode. Episode 16 was what are bonds and bond funds. Talked all about how bonds can go up or down in value. These savings bonds, these I-bonds, cannot go down in value. You never get less, get out less than you put in. And these are different. There's other types of government savings bonds. You may have heard of Series EE, you know, EE bonds. You may be wondering, how are those different than I-bonds? Well, you can look it up. I mean, Treasury Direct has all this in great detail. But in a nutshell, EE bonds are different in that the interest rate they pay, once you buy the bond, the interest rate's locked in for the life of the bond. Currently, I think it's only paying like 0.10% per year, if I remember correctly. And they will pay that for the life you own the bond. But they have this additional guarantee that with over the course of 20 years, the amount you put in will double. So if the actual interest rate you're getting in your double E bond is low, they'll top you up at the end of 20 years. If you own the bond for 20 years, you will double your original money. Or if the interest rate ends up being higher, then you'll get more than double. But that's EE bonds. Series I bonds, which we're talking about today, do not have any sort of long-term guarantee that you will get at least a certain amount of money. But you'll see as we go through this. So let's start with how to buy Series I bonds. There's two ways you can do it. You can buy them electronically through treasurydirect.gov. And treasurydirect.gov is the website for the U.S. Treasury where you have to create an account, you link up a bank account to it, and that's where you go to buy these things. So these I bonds exist electronically. When you buy them this way, you don't get a physical certificate. There's nothing sent in the mail to you. It's just, you know, it exists only in electronic form. Kind of like if you open a high yield savings account or something, right? It's all online. You don't typically have a branch you go to. You know, it's all an online transaction. So these electronic versions of these I bonds are functionally the same thing. You can also buy some through a refund in your tax return. So if you get a refund in your tax return, I should say, you know, not everyone does, but if you get a refund in your tax return, you can use some or all of that refund, subject to a dollar limitation, which I'll discuss. You can have some of that refund go to purchase I bonds. Now, specifically, there's a form 8888 that you use as part of your return to say, hey, I want X amount of dollars of my refund to go towards buying I bonds. And then you fill that out, send it in with your return, and then you will get in the mail, you will get paper, you know, physical bonds, which are kind of cool to look at. But you'll get physical bonds. You can hold those physical bonds, or you can convert them. If you have an online Treasury Direct account, you can convert those paper bonds into electronic form. So you'll then see those bonds in your Treasury Direct account, and they'll be simply added to whatever other electronic version of these bonds you already have. One thing to be aware of is you cannot buy I bonds through a qualified account, like a retirement account, you know, like an IRA, Roth IRA, 401k. You can only buy them with like normal after-tax money. You know, you link up your bank account to Treasury Direct, and that's how you buy them. You can't link up a Roth IRA or an IRA to that, or 401k. You only link up like normal bank accounts. You also cannot buy them through a brokerage account. So you have an account at whatever, Fidelity, Schwab, TD, Vanguard, doesn't matter. You cannot buy I bonds through your brokerage account or whatever you have there. So you have to link up a bank account. Now, if you have like a checking account, like Schwab, for example, has checking accounts, sure, you can link up that account to Treasury Direct and buy I bonds that way. But that's not a brokerage account. That's just a regular, you know, banking account. So if you do want to buy them, you have to buy them direct through Treasury Direct website or through your tax return refund. You cannot buy them through brokerage accounts, through IRAs, through Roth IRAs. Moving on. So how much can you actually buy of I bonds? Now, you can buy up to $10,000 per calendar year per person. Now, technically, I don't know if it's keyed off of taxpayer, like Social Security. I think it might be keyed off a Social Security number. So if you're an individual, you're single, you can buy $10,000 per calendar year for yourself. Here's where things get a little, if you're married, you can buy, each of you and your spouse can buy $10,000 each. So that's $20,000 per year per couple. Now, here's where things get a little tricky. And I frankly don't know exactly the ins and outs of this, but if you have a business or a trust those are different entities separate and distinct from you. They can also buy up to $10,000 per year. So if you have, your own, you're self-employed, you have a business, that if I think it needs its own taxpayer ID, I believe, this is where I'm not sure. So if you have your own LLC, for example, I believe you can buy an additional $10,000 in the name of that LLC for the year. Now, what I haven't been able to figure out is how exactly you report that. I've seen conflicting feedback. Some say you would report the interest you get on these bonds as self-employment income, which doesn't sound right, but apparently that's where the IRS says it goes, allegedly. Or I've seen other people say, no, if you buy it through the business, you would still report the interest on your own personal tax return, Schedule B of your tax return. But I've also heard people say that that got flagged by the IRS and they questioned it. So I don't know, kind of buyer beware. I'll put this on you all to figure more out about if you are exploring trying to buy more I-bonds in the name of a business or something. You got to do some more research and figure out exactly how to do it or if it makes sense for you. And if you have trusts, I've also gotten slightly conflicting info. Some people say they have, living revocable trusts that don't have their own taxpayer ID, and they were able to buy additional I-bonds in the name of that trust. I've heard anecdotally other folks say, no, it needs to be like an irrevocable trust that has its own taxpayer ID separate from the person's social security number in order to buy additional I-bonds in the name of the trust. So again, I don't exactly know the answer to that. If this does potentially apply to you, check with your tax return preparer or whomever else, your financial advisor, to get more insight into whether or not this could work for you. Now, in addition to being able to buy $10,000 per year per person or per entity in this case, the tax return thing I mentioned, you can buy an additional up to $5,000 of I-bonds, regardless how much you do or don't buy, under that $10,000 per person per year limit, you can buy up to $5,000 per tax return. Again, this presupposes you have a refund on your return, and you can use up to $5,000 of refund to kind of divert off to buy I-bonds as opposed to get, paid out that refund in cash. Now, it's $5,000 per return, not per person. So if you're married and file a joint return, you and your spouse can each buy $10,000 in I-bonds, so that's 20, and then only $5,000 more in your return. Just because there's two of you on the return doesn't mean you can each buy $5,000 more with tax return refund. It's $5,000 per return. You can also buy them as gifts for others. Give them to your spouse, give them to a parent, give them to kids. But when you do buy I-bonds for gifts or as gifts for others, the recipient of that gift, that I-bond will count towards that person's limit. So for example, your spouse buys $10,000 of I-bonds in her own name. You can't separately buy her $10,000 more as a gift and give to her, because that'll be $20,000 for the year and can't do it. So recipients need to count gifted I-bonds toward their annual limit. You can, if you do buy them electronically as a gift for someone, the recipient needs to have his or her own Treasury Direct account already. I don't believe you can set up an account for someone, basically link it to your own account to buy bonds for them. But if you're buying bonds for another adult, I don't think you can set up an account for them. They need to already have the Treasury Direct account set up in order for you to buy them bonds as a gift. You can buy paper I-bonds for someone, though, without them needing a Treasury Direct account. I don't know the exact process. I believe this is all detailed on treasurydirect.gov, but you can say, hey, I want to buy $10,000 of I-bonds for Jane Smith, and you can have the bonds, paper bonds, sent to you, made out to, Jane Smith's name will be the bond holder on them. And then once you get the paper bonds in the mail, you can then physically give them to Jane Smith, and there she goes. She now has, $10,000 or whatever amount of I-bonds in her name. And as I already mentioned, you can buy for your kids, for minors. You can basically open a custodial account, link it up, all done through Treasury Direct. You link it up to your own account, and you can buy them an additional, $10,000 per year per child. So let's talk a little more about how these bonds are actually registered, how they're named or whose name they go in, and some more about beneficiary info. So you can own the bonds a few ways. You can own them as an individual. So John Doe, for example, if you're John Doe, you simply buy bonds, whether you buy them through Treasury Direct electronically or you get them in paper form, the name on the bond would just simply say John Doe, as the owner. What happens then if you die from a beneficiary perspective, that bond simply goes into your estate. With everything else you own, through probate, like your house, like regular brokerage accounts, like like cash in banks, like personal effects. You know, it just goes into your estate, and then that bond eventually gets divvied out to, you know, however your will dictates your heirs and beneficiaries, you know, who gets what. You can, if you want to try to, you know, sort of streamline the beneficiary transfer process, you can title the bond, you can get it registered as your name, but payable on death to someone else. So if and when you die, the bond then automatically goes direct to whomever is named as the payable on death recipient or beneficiary. So let's again assume John Doe is the one who buys the bond, wants to leave it to his sister Jane Doe. So he can register the bond as John Doe, P-O-D, as in payable on death, to Jane Doe. So that the bond title, whether it's through Treasury Direct or, you know, paper form, will say John Doe, P-O-D, to Jane Doe. So now if and when John Doe dies, the bond automatically is kind of, you know, retitled or now belongs to Jane Doe, the POD recipient. So now when John Doe's alive, only he's the one who can control when this bond is, you know, purchased or redeemed or whatever. Jane Doe has no control over the bond while John is alive. Jane only gets it if and when John dies. Now, when someone inherits a bond this way, the inherited bond does not count against the beneficiary's limit. So again, in this example, Jane Doe is a beneficiary. Jane Doe can normally buy $10,000 of I-bonds per year. If John Doe dies this year and leaves his $50,000 of I-bonds to Jane Doe, Jane can still buy her $10,000 this year and receive this $50,000 from John Doe's death. They do not count against the beneficiary's annual limit. So that's two ways to own it: individual with a payable on death beneficiary, or you can own them joint. So let's a spouse, for example. So John Doe is the primary owner. Let's say Jane Doe is John's wife. So the title would say John Doe or Jane Doe on it. Now, whoever's name is first is the primary owner of the bond. Whoever's name is second is the secondary owner. In this case, John Doe could buy $10,000 this way. Jane Doe can still buy another, you know, $10,000 as an individual. I believe that's right. So I don't think they'd have to have all their bonds titled. Let me think about that. Actually, I'm not entirely sure. So if it's John Doe or Jane Doe is the title in the bond, John Doe is the primary. So I do believe Jane Doe can buy another $10,000 in her own name, or she can buy it as like Jane Doe or John Doe could be the title on hers. And the benefit of this is like a joint tenants with rights of survivorship bank account. When the primary dies, the secondary name automatically takes ownership of the bond. So it's loosely similar to a payable on death, as I just mentioned. But I think when owning joint, I'm not 100% certain, but I think you need to be married to do that. I don't know that you can do this outside of spouses. Like, I don't know if a parent can buy it jointly with a child or with a, you know, a parent or whatever. That's something to look into. So, outside of the transfer on death process by having it jointly owned, if you're an individual, I don't know that it'll make a lot of sense, although I guess there could be scenarios where you do want to add someone. If you can, you know, if it doesn't need to be a spouse, this could be part of your estate planning, in terms of how you name who gets what when you eventually leave this realm, this world. So now let's talk about denominations. How much, I said you can buy up to $10,000 per year. What's the increments you can actually buy them? So if you're buying online through treasurydirect.gov, the minimum size is $25 per purchase, and you can buy anywhere between $25 up to the full $10,000 to the penny. So you can buy like, you know, $37.18 of I-bond if you want to. Now, you don't have to, you're not limited to making one transaction per year. You can buy as many. I don't think there's a limit. Like, maybe if you buy like, you know, two transactions a day, the government may be like, hey, this is silly, cut it out. But functionally, there is no limit. You know, you can set it up to buy some I-bonds every month or every week or something like that. Or you can just randomly make two or three purchases throughout the year. As long as you don't exceed your annual limit of $10,000, then it's fine. So anywhere from $25 up to $10,000 in increments of a penny. If you get them in paper form, whether it's through your tax return or you're buying them as a gift in paper form for someone else, there's only five denominations where it's $50, $100, $200, $500, and $1,000. You cannot get paper bonds in, you know, $87 increments or anything like that. So that's denominations. Interest. So this is probably what you're most interested in and why, hey, plan words, interested in, and why I-bonds are such a hot topic now. So as I mentioned at the beginning of this episode, the interest rate that I-bonds pay changes every 6 months, and that new rate's announced every May 1st and November 1st. And as I touched on, the interest rate is a combination of a fixed rate and some actual or the actual change in CPI-U over the prior 6 months. Now, I'm frankly not entirely sure how the fixed rate is set. As I mentioned, it's been zero for a couple of years now, and it was zero again, previously at other times, I think around 2011 or so. My guess is it's going to stay zero for the foreseeable future unless interest rates really start to get systemically higher, but assume for now the fixed rate will stay zero. So the inflation rate, the second part of the interest that you get, as I mentioned, is the actual change in the CPI-U readings over the prior 6 months. Specifically, the interest rate that will be announced on May 1st is going to be the change in the CPI-U readings from March 2022 compared to the September 2021 CPI-U readings. So why is it March, you're saying? So the new rate's announced in May. Why are we using a March inflation number? Well, that's because each month the CPI-U reading isn't out until approximately 10 days after. So as of May 1st, we don't yet know what the April inflation figure is because it takes a handful of days for the Bureau of Labor Statistics to actually gather this data and tabulate it and whatever. So the most recently available monthly reading as of May 1st is going to be the March, the March reading. So the May 1st, 2022 inflation, change in inflation rate is going to be the actual CPI-U reading as of March 2022 compared to the actual CPI-U reading as of September 2021. That change is a six-month change, and then simply multiply that by two, and that's the annual rate that that will be announced on May 1st. Just so you know, it's not formally announced yet because here I am recording this. It's April 2022. May 1st hasn't rolled around yet, but based on the math of the March 2022 CPI-U figure, the new inflation rate on I-bonds should be 9.62% by my calculation, starting to be announced on May 1st. Currently, it's 7.12% on an annual basis. So how you actually get interest is every 6 months from when you buy it, you will get a guaranteed rate of interest for 6 months. After 6 months, it resets to what the new interest rate is. So for example, if you buy now prior to May 1st, 2022, you're going to get a guaranteed rate of interest for April, May, June, July, August, September. Specifically, the rate you'll get is 7.12%. So again, if you buy I-bonds prior to May 2022, the first 6 months of interest will be a guaranteed annual rate of 7.12%. And the second 6 months of interest will be whatever the to-be-announced rate is, the rate that will get announced on May 1st, which, again, as I said, it should be 9.62%. So the first 6 months you own this bond, assuming, again, you buy it before May, will be 7.12% on an annual basis. The second 6 months of this bond will pay an annual 9.62%. After that, we don't know what the rate's going to be yet. We have to wait until the November 1st, 2022 I-bond announcement, and we won't know that until the, let me do the math here, September, we'll need to know the September 2022 CPI-U reading. So there's still multiple months of life and history to be made here, and we don't know what inflation is going to be over the next handful of months, so it's impossible to say what the rate will be. But the point is, every 6 months, the rate is locked in. You will earn interest guaranteed at that rate for 6 months, and then it'll reset based on whatever the most recent announcement is. Again, where these announcements are May 1st to November 1st every year. So the interest calculation part slightly tricky. As I'm talking about this, I realize, wow, there's more moving pieces here than I thought there was when I was thinking about this. So definitely check out the treasurydirect.gov website. They give examples exactly how this works based on what month you buy the bond, what interest rate you're going to get, and for how long. But just know that you're guaranteed an interest rate for 6 months, and then it changes to whatever the next observed change in inflation is. And so every 6 months, this thing resets. Suffice it to say that, that's the interest process. Let's leave it there for now, I guess. The interest compounds every 6 months as well. So the first 6 months you own it, you'll get interest on your original principal. Let's assume you put $10,000 in. Every month, you're going to get interest on that $10,000. And at the end of 6 months, all that accrued interest you got over the first 6 months is added to your balance. So let's assume you put in 10 grand originally, and you get, I'm just making up a number here, 300 bucks of accrued interest over the first 6 months. When you start your second 6 month period, you'll now have $10,300 on which the new interest rate will apply for the second 6 months. And so every 6 months, you're kind of batching up and accruing some interest. At the end of that 6 months, that interest is added to your principal balance. And then going forward, you're earning interest on that combined compounded balance. These bonds only last for 30 years in terms of the interest they accrue. So first month you buy it, you'll start getting interest. Again, every 6 months, that interest rate changes. At the end of 30 months, that's it. No more interest is earned. These things don't grow anymore beyond that. If you own the bonds electronically, you're automatically cashed out at the end of 30 years. You'll simply get your principal back and all the interest that you accrued along the way. If you have the bond in paper form, you will need to manually redeem it, which you can do through banks. I don't believe, other than converting them to electronic, I don't think you can send them into Treasury Direct to get them redeemed. I believe you have to redeem them through banks. And to my knowledge, most banks, or at least major banks, will you can walk in, take your bonds. They will cash you out there. Interest rates can never be negative, which is important to know. This goes back to the whole you can't lose principal in these things. Even if there is deflation, where the CPIU goes down over a six-month period, your interest rate will be floored at zero. You can never get a negative interest rate on these, so you can never actually lose money. And important timing considerations. As I mentioned, the new rates are announced May 1st, November 1st every year. If you're trying to time it and you want to buy some prior to May 1st, do not wait till April 30th to buy it, because there is, I believe, a one business day settlement period, maybe two to be conservative, but I believe it's only one. So if it's April 30th and you log on to Treasury Direct and you put in an order to buy 10,000 bonds, well, guess what? That transaction will not be effective April 30th. It's not going to be till May 1st or whatever the next business day is. So you may be surprised. Oh man, like I thought I was cool trying to get it for April 30th to time it exactly, but no, that's actually going to be a May purchase. So that, I mean, not that it's necessarily bad, but just keep that in mind. If you're trying to cut this real close with the timing when you buy it, do leave at least one day, maybe even two business days for these things to actually settle. So now let's talk about how you can redeem them. We talked about how you get money in, now how do you get it out? So here's one of the big downsides. You cannot redeem at all within the first 12 months of buying an I bond. Now, this applies per purchase, not across all bonds. So let's assume you've been buying 10 grand of I bonds every year for the last 10 years or whatever. You buy some today. That doesn't mean that you're now restricted from redeeming any of your bonds, all the bonds you bought over the last 10 years. It's only the most recently purchased. So you buy some today, the 10,000 you buy today, you cannot take that 10,000 out for at least 12 months. You just simply, it's not even an option. It's penalized. There's just no option. So keep that in mind. If you take it out between 12 and 60 months, so between 1 and 5 years of when you purchased it, there is a bit of a penalty. That penalty is having to give up the most recent 3 months of interest that you accrued. So not super punitive, won't eat into principal, but it will trim down a little bit some of the interest that you accrued. If you hold the bond for at least 5 years, 60 months, and then redeem, there's no penalty whatsoever. You take out your money. They don't ding you for any sort of penalty. You don't have to give up any last 3 months of interest or anything like that. If these are electronic, that you bought direct through treasurydirect.gov, you simply redeem them through treasurydirect.gov, and whatever bank account you have linked up to it, that's where the money and the proceeds are going to go. They'll just simply ACH transfer it right there. If it's paper, as I mentioned, a paper bond, you have to redeem them through a physical bank, bring it into the branch, and they should be able to cash you out there. How are they taxed? So interest that you get is taxable. It's fully taxable at the federal level. At the state level, it's not taxed. Even if you're in, like, I'm not just talking about states like Florida and Texas that don't have income tax, but even if you're in a state that does have income tax, like me, New Jersey, you know, high tax state, the interest on I-bonds is not taxable at the state level. Now, by default, you don't pay interest along the way. So if you buy an I-bond and you hold it for 30 years, you're accruing interest, along the way throughout those 30 years, but you don't have to pay tax on it during those 30 years. What would happen is when you do eventually redeem some or all of your I-bonds, you get cashed out then. You get your, you know, original principal out plus however much interest you accrued. In that year that you do that redemption, that's when you have to pay, you know, recognize the income and pay the tax on all the interest that you cashed out at the time. That's the standard default treatment of this. And you will get a form 1099-INT-INT in the year you redeem, showing the total amount of interest paid out to you. Now, if you want, you can choose to pay tax throughout the years instead of waiting to cash it out to recognize the taxability of it. You can opt to pay tax on the amount of interest that's accrued year by year. Now, I don't think you do this through Treasury Direct. There's no like way to, no place to go in and designate, hey, I want to pay tax along the way. It's simply between you and the IRS and how you do your tax return. You would elect to figure out, you could go to your Treasury Direct account and you can see how much interest was earned for the year. You would voluntarily claim that as taxable interest on that year's tax return. And then the only bit of kind of pickle is going to be when you do eventually cash the bond out, whether it's 1 year, 30 years down the road, you're going to get this big fat 1099-INT, making it look like all of the interest is taxable at the time. But in your case, if you did this, you know, tax as it's earned along the way, you're going to have to say, no, IRS, I actually pay tax, you know, over the last X amount of years. So the amount that's reported now isn't actually all taxable. So I'll leave it there. This is not specific tax advice. Ask this question of your tax return preparer or CPA if you want to pursue this, you know, this accrual taxation method, or see IRS publication 550 for a little more info about how to do this. Just know that once you start doing the accrual method and paying tax along the way, you have to pay tax along the way for all of your savings bonds. You can't pick and choose just certain bonds to pay tax along the way and defer others. It's kind of an all or none thing. So finally, do I-bonds make sense? So it really all depends. Like any financial product, it's based on your specific needs and circumstances, et cetera. The fact that there's a fairly small purchase limit, you know, $10,000 per person per year, plus a little more through tax return, plus a little more if you have a business or trust, maybe, they're not likely going to change your life. You know, if you have $500,000, you're looking to park somewhere, this isn't going to be it, because it's going to take you a while to build up that much. Now, if you've been buying them over the years, especially if you bought some, you know, 20 years ago when the fixed rate was 3% or whatever, then yeah, they're you know, they're paying a lot now, and maybe it is kind of life changing if you have tens of thousands, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars of I-bonds built up. Because I don't think I mentioned this, but the fixed rate, whenever you buy a new I-bond, whatever the fixed rate is at the time, you will have that fixed rate on that I-bond forever. Even if and when the fixed rate on new bonds comes down, the fact that you bought some when the fixed rate was whatever, you know, 1%, you will always have that 1% fixed rate, on top of which you'll get the new, you know, 6 month base inflation rate, every 6 months. So if you did have the foresight or dumb luck or whatever to have bought some I bonds 20 years ago when there was a 3.6% fixed rate, now add to it the, you know, the 7 or 9% inflation rate. That's really good interest. You know, you're getting 10-12% guaranteed interest, albeit only for 6 months, because who knows what inflation is going to do after that. But still, that's really good, really high fixed rate interest, which is why, or guaranteed interest, which is why I-bonds are kind of all the rage now. Where else can you go to get a guaranteed 7.12% or soon to be 9.62% annually? That's quite good. But anyway, small purchase amounts really limit how much you can, if you don't already have a lot of I-bonds, it really limits the bang for the buck with these things. And the hard restriction on redemptions, you know, again, you can't take any money out within the first year of buying an I-bond. That could really hamstring some folks. So this is not a short-term cash savings vehicle. You can't just put money in, you know, take it out in 3 months and be on your way. No, it's locked up for 12 months. So you have to plan around that. The interest rate, while it's really high now, It's only high because inflation's so high. So while it's good, the I bond interest is high, it's bad because that means inflation is that much higher than it has been. But while the rate is high now, it can and will change, and inflation will come down at some point. I don't know if it's going to be next month or next year, but inflation will subside, in which case the interest rate you're going to be getting on these, especially with the 0% fixed rate, you know, the interest rate's going to be whatever inflation is at the time. And inflation has been zero or close to it in the not too distant past. So it's possible we may get back to that, in which case I bonds won't be so hot then, but at least you will have gotten your, 7.12 or 9.62% guaranteed interest, while you could. And not that this is a deal breaker, but it's slightly annoying to have to create and open up a new account at Treasury Direct. You know, the fact that you can't buy these through your bank or buy them through a brokerage account is one more website to worry about, one more login to have to worry about. Not that that's a huge deal, but still, it's slightly annoying. So do they make sense? You know, it really all depends. If you have a lot of cash sitting around, don't really need it for the next year or two, yeah, why not peel off 10 grand or 20 grand if you're married? To put into I bonds. Again, the interest isn't going to change your life. We're talking about a few $100, you know, maybe a few $1,000 more than what you can get in a regular high yield savings account currently. So it's really not much to write home about in absolute terms, but still, you know, $500 is $500 or whatever it is. I'll gladly take that, and especially since there's no risk of loss. And I don't think it's too onerous or burdensome to have to create and maintain this Treasury Direct account. So it all depends. Again, inflation will come down at some point, in which case these won't be so stellar looking anymore. But while we have this really high inflation, these are pretty slick products to take advantage of, especially since there's no risk of principal loss. So that's that. Hope you found this helpful. I know I dumped a lot on you, but I try to sum up as best as possible while being as thorough as possible. Everything you may want to know about the hot topic I bonds. If you like this podcast, definitely check out my other content sources. My Facebook group is Taxes and Retirement. My YouTube channel is Retirement Planning Demystified, and my monthly e-newsletter is Retirement Planning Insights. You can find links to all three of these in the show notes. That's it. Thanks for listening. Take care. I'll see you next time.
The information discussed in this podcast is only general explanations and education. It is not specific tax, legal, or investment advice. Before considering acting on anything you heard here, first consult with your tax, legal, or investment advisor. Thank you.